Hello and welcome to pod 10 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube, the Palace app and all the social medias. So, what is this week all about? Well, on Monday something happened in Bournemouth, but let's forget about that because also on Monday we chatted to former Palace right back Danny Butterfield. On Tuesday, hot prospect Naya Kirby signed a new contract. Later on in the week, Statman became a corporate salesman and Rory spoke to the world's media. But first of all, Max Meyer has given his very first interview since joining the club. He spoke to Premier League Productions. Before now, he just wanted to wait until his English was a little bit better before he got put up for any media requirements. But he has done his first one now and we had a microphone in the room. You will be able to hear Chico from our sports science department, who speaks a little bit of German, so he was helping Max out with some translations.
Okay, Max, thank you for speaking to us. Crystal Palace have won 2 games out of 7. Do you think you should have won more?
Was fand du?
Also die haben bis jetzt
sollten mehr gewonnen.
2 von 7 gewonnen. Yeah. Meinst du, dass die mehr gewonnen haben sollten?
I think in the games we played good, the most of the games, but we had many chances, but we didn't score, and I think that's a thing what we can improve for the next games, that we score the goals, and I think then we get the 3 points.
Palace have not scored any goals at home this season. Tomorrow you are at home against Wolves. How important is it to score at home, your first goal?
Most important thing, I think, when you don't score, you cannot win the games. And when I remember the last games at the Selhurst Park, we had many chances in the last minutes against Newcastle. And normally we have to score and we win the game.
You play Wolves tomorrow. They have had a good start to the season. They are 5 points above Crystal Palace in the Premier League table. How much do you know about Wolves, the team?
I know a little bit. They have many Portuguese players and play very good football, and it's not an easy game for us tomorrow.
How do you feel you have settled in here to the club since you have arrived?
Wie hast du dich bisher dran gewöhnt hier Palace?
The first weeks was very excited for me. A new country, a new language, new teammates, and it was not so easy for me, but now it's very good. I have a good fitness, and everyone in the team helps me, and I feel good.
And you started your first game on Monday against Bournemouth. You lost, the team lost, but how was that match for you?
Yeah, it was, I think we played very well in the second half, and at the end it was a bit unlucky. But I think the kind how we played was good, and when we play like second half, we can win many games in the season.
Your teammates, your new teammates here, have also helped you settle into the club. Your new colleagues.
They helped me a lot. Was heißt Anfang?
Start.
At the start, I didn't know so many players here. Just 4 or 5 players, and it was not easy for me at the start, and but now it's better. I know everyone, and I know the club perfect, and I like it to play here. I enjoy it.
And how do you find London? You're a young man in London.
Yeah.
It's a great city. Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, it's amazing. London is a beautiful city, and I enjoy it every day, and it's unbelievable.
Do you see the Premier League as being a step up from the Bundesliga?
Yeah, of course, it's a step up for me. Everyone watch the games in the Premier League, and the Bundesliga was good, but I think the Premier League is better.
And you as a player, when you started, you were more of an attacking player. Now you have, your game has changed, you have dropped a little deeper. Talk a little bit about this change in your game.
I think I can play both positions, a little bit in front or behind. It's not a problem for me, but I think in the last season I learned very much on the defense position, and I know it's good for me because I can play offensive and defense.
And passing is a very big part of your game. You are a very good passer of the ball. Against Bournemouth, you had the highest pass percentage of any player on the pitch. Is this an important part of your game, passing?
Yeah, I think that's it's my play. I want to lose any balls, and I like it to have the ball and to play, and that's my play.
Do you practice and train very hard at passing?
Yeah. In the past, I trained very much, and that's the result.
And finally, what are your aims, your hopes for your time here at Crystal Palace?
Yeah, I think I want to make the next step in my career, and I want to play good football with Crystal Palace, and that we finished maybe in the top 10 in this season, and to have fun, and that's the most important thing.
Max, no middle name, Maya there. Right, let's get all nostalgic. With the visit of Wolves this weekend, seems like a good time to head to Milton Keynes and have a catch-up with Danny Butterfield, who famously scored a 6 minute and 48 seconds hat-trick against the Midlanders. He's first team coach, MK Dons now, and we chatted to him in the stands at Stadium MK. It was over 40 minutes of chat on his career in total, which will turn into a nice Cult Heroes video at some point, and probably a long podcast too. But this week, let's listen to the chunk about going into administration and then the hat-trick against Wolves. Now, moving on to the 9-10 season. You've been at the club for 7, coming on to 8 years at this point, but this is what you're now most famous for, the hat-trick. Just, if we go back a little bit before that, club went into admin between the first game against Wolves, wasn't it? And the replay, because I think, was it away to Newcastle?
Yeah.
What was that like, getting the news?
Well, it was sort of on the horizon. We were sort of hearing rumours, and PFA were coming in and having meetings, and I remember Portsmouth sort of being in the same predicament, although they were Premier League and paying hundreds of thousands of pounds to the players, etc. And it was sort of, the rumours were getting stronger and stronger. We jumped on a flight up to Newcastle, and by the time we'd landed, we'd gone into administration and been docked. So we'd gone from, I think we were in the playoffs, to jump, and I think we ended up in the bottom three, or one out the bottom three. So we'd gone from going up to Newcastle and thinking we're fighting for promotion to we're in a right relegation battle here. I don't think we could have had a better squad to deal with it, because we had the Sean Derrys, Clint Hills, Matty Lawrence, who else did I say?
Alan
Lees. We had these characters that you wanted with you in the trenches. So even though we were in a relegation battle, we had the players, obviously, had the calibre to be fighting for the playoffs, because we were already doing that. But it's a difficult mindset when you drop a couple of points, you might slip out of the playoffs, or you drop a couple of points, you're in the bottom two. So the mindset swings a little bit. But we had a squad that were more than capable of fighting a way out of that. We took it right to the wire. But I think we were built to stay in the league that year with the squad that Neil had obviously built.
So by the time it came to that replay, there was actually more on it, because if you get through to the next round, there's more money.
Yeah.
So were you aware of that going into the game?
It was, because we knew cup competitions offered the club finances, and without thinking it, you don't think if we get a win here, we might be able to get paid, and you don't have to shuffle your bank balance about to pay your mortgage, etc., etc. But you do know that it's a big contribution to the club to win that one, which is on TV, because of course you get the next leg. So we know about the importance of winning the game, and I know the Kleine turned down a move to Wolves actually the 2 or 3 days before, which meant obviously he was going to play. It was either going to be me play right back or Kleine play right back. But with selling Victor to Wigan, it had been, it freed up a place up top, which I was never going to fill. But in a training session under Neil Warnock, typical five-a-side. I played up front with Alan Lee, and Neil being Neil said, we'll go with that tomorrow. And we did.
How did he tell you?
I don't think he told us. It was sort of rumours that everyone was joking about the dressing room. Flipping net, but she'll be up top tomorrow with Al after scoring goals in five-a-sides like that. And it was like sniggery. And then turn up to the game and he actually written it on the board and you say, no, but she'll play right of Al. And Darren Ambrose would play to the left of him. And it was a little bit comical, but it was also like a bit of a freebie for the squad, but for me, of thinking, listen, what's the worst that can happen? We're on TV, we're flipping, Butts gets embarrassed. We're on TV, the club get money, and we've got a chance of beating Wolves in a one-off game. So, yeah, and that was sort of the mentality going into it, but we still had a squad that we thought we were good enough to beat Wolves on the night.
Well, the goals came in the second half. How was your first half performance?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Yeah, it was terrible. I was thinking I could get dragged here. I was thinking, or I might get moved somewhere else, or it wasn't great. I remember looking back at it and thinking, I won't do anything particularly bad, but I won't do anything great. And you know, you're thinking, we're at home, we need to win. It's going to be me that comes off. It's a freebie, he's put me up there. And then I always remembered me playing balls towards Alan Lee. I knew where Alan flicked it. I could tell by his body shape the way he was going to flick it, whether he was going to flick to the side, was flick it straight. I just knew. Because 9 times out of 10, it was me playing them diagonals at Alan to begin with in the previous game. So that sort of helped, really, as the game was developing. I know Jules hit a couple towards him and I gambled on it. And I know he sort of went off and Neil Warnock was going mad for getting stitches in his head and he's wearing a headband. But the second half just seemed to click. We did go a little bit more direct to Al. And I was just gambling off of him, I suppose.
But the first one was actually a good save by Wayne Hennessy from the initial header.
Matty Lawrence.
And then your striker's instinct.
Yeah, listen. That is playing as a striker from under sevens all the way through to about under 12s. No, I think that was, it must have been just an instinct thing on the night. I remember it won a corner, so I sort of play acted it was a corner, won the corner. And then I just remember trotting back into the middle thinking, this might drop here. And Matty Lawrence produced an unbelievable header, which always gets forgotten. Wayne Hennessy makes a great save, and I was there with Mansian just to flick it in. So it was it was a great moment on the night, but it was great for the club to thinking we've got a chance of taking this on and winning it.
What did it feel like when you got the third one?
Comical. Disbelief. It because it all happened so quickly, it was actually funny. It was actually funny on the. I remember looking at Sean Derry, and he's sort of going, and I'm going. So, it was just comical. I think the sort of character I was around the place. I knew all the lads was happy for me. I knew the lads was buzzing that it was happening to me because I was the dressing room joker and I've been at the club such a long time. And it was a real special moment for me. But as daft as it sounds, almost embarrassing at the same time, because that's not what I do.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. It's something that I treasure at the back of my mind, but I do still feel embarrassed talking about it because it sort of shouldn't have happened to me. But it did, and we got the club through to the next round, a little bit of money, and the club picked up and we went on and finished the season with a survival day at the end of it.
Yeah, you would have been remembered anyway, but it must be nice to know that you're going down in folklore. It's still the fastest hat-trick by a Palace player.
I think you often get players similar to, I'm not saying I was of his calibre, by the way, but players like a Dennis Irwin at Man United, who a massive unsung hero, and he'll be remembered, but like you say, to be part of the history of Palace now with the hat trick, I'm sure it'll get broken one day or whatever, but to be part of the history and to remember at a club which was a massive part of my life for 8 years is a real bonus.
What did Neil Warnock say to you afterwards?
I told you you'd do it. He took all the credit. He didn't let me do any of the press. It was all him. But I didn't mind that because he had the guts to give me the opportunity to do it. He is typical Neil. Who else would have put me up top? I very much doubt anyone would have done. So it was a free hit for me to do something on a night when there was no expectations on my shoulders anyway, because it's not the position I traditionally played. So a great experience, and still a funny one when you think about it, and some of the faces that were on the pitch at the time. I should have had a fourth, by the way. I should have had a fourth. But a great experience, and obviously a part of the Palace history.
I like butts, and I cannot lie. Right, from old to young now, under-17 World Cup winner Naya Kirby signed a new contract with the club this week, and Alex Howe got his thoughts on that at the training ground. And I kept my distance behind the camera because I had man flu.
Naya, congratulations on signing your new contract at the club and committing your future. How excited are you to be a professional at Crystal Palace?
Amazing, amazing achievement for me, and I'm always willing to work hard for the gaffer, and I'm excited to get started.
You've trained with the first team a lot last year, a lot this year, and you went on the pre-season tour to Sweden. How has that helped you to develop?
No, just playing and being around all the players 24/7 is a great experience, and it makes me a better athlete.
Roy's an experienced manager, he's been at lots of clubs and been a manager for many years. What have you managed to learn from him?
I feel like just the game management and taking his advice from his experiences has helped my game definitely.
Are there any players in the first team squad who have taken you under their wing and you like to look up to?
I feel like Maka and Luca, as obviously they play me for the same as me, so and me just watching them, even watching what they eat, what they're doing, is helping me in my game definitely.
You've been on the bench for a Premier League game. How much did that motivate you to kick on?
Just even listening to the crowd or just warming up and being there watching them play is amazing.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka, ex-teammate of yours from the under-23s, has won Player of the Month 2 months in a row now. Does that show there's a pathway from the 23s into the first team?
No, definitely. No, it just shows that it's literally a grasp away, and just as long as you keep working hard as Aaron done, and then I just got to hopefully fulfil what he's done.
Have you spoke to him much about moving into the first team?
Yeah. No, me and him have a good relationship and always talk, so no, that's good.
And January's not too far away. Is a loan move something you're looking at?
Yeah, maybe if I don't. If the gaffer said I need some games, so yeah. No, maybe.
And it is simply now party time for England's under-17s.
Let's talk about your England career. Not many people can say they're a World Cup winner. What's that like?
I think even now I still can't believe it. No, it was a great experience, and it's a thing that I could always look back on.
And it's a bit of a different question for a contract announcement. Who's the best player you've played with and the best player you've played against?
That's a difficult one. Best player I've played with, I'd have to say Dele Alli. And the best player I've played against is Zaha in training, because his 1v1. Something else, definitely.
Congratulations on signing your new contract at the club. And if you had your own way, how would you see those years going?
For me, just to keep on training and working hard in the first team, and hopefully I can make my appearance towards the end of the season.
Thanks, Naya.
Cheers, thank you very much.
Yes, Naya. Now, an apology in advance for this week's Statman. I crack an obvious Accrington Stanley joke that Statman doesn't actually get, and then I ruined it by incorrectly thinking it was from a Caramac advert. I have no idea why I said Caramac advert, because it was clearly a milk advert. What an idiot. Play the jingle. Statman. Hello and welcome to the lovely surroundings of the 2010 club at Selhurst Park, where I'm joined by Statman. This is rather nice, isn't it?
This is fantastic, Chris. This is the place to be, isn't it? You'd like to be here on a match day, wouldn't you?
I would. What can you see around you? Describe it for the listeners.
So the feel of it, I think Steve sort of went for this one. It's like a private members club, a bit of a Soho, central London feel to it. You know, really exclusive. All your food, all your drinks included. Available from 275, Chris. 275 for the Wolves game.
Plus fat.
Yeah, plus your fat. Yeah. We don't mention that.
Wow, look at that. You are sponsored by someone, by the sounds of it. No. Actually, this is where you mentioned last week that magical day for Chrissy Grierson in the
The job interview in the van. Was that the one?
Well, when they announced the winner on the pitch at half time, it was in here that we got hospitality with my dad. My dad made a mistake. He went for his usual chicken and chips at Aussies in Addiscombe first. Came here and then stuffed a 7-course meal down. I think
that's inspiring.
Yeah. That was.
And how was your experience?
Very nice. Thank you very much. I was a little bit, nervous, apprehensive before. Then I didn't go in for half time. I actually had to go to a wedding that day. So I went on the pitch and then I got a taxi to a wedding.
Oh, it's a busy life, isn't it? And to be fair, you're not going to say you got food poisoning or anything like that from the experience, are you? It was always going to be good, wasn't it? But it was genuinely good. You've told me before you had a great time.
It was really good, yeah. Food's great.
Yeah.
Shame about the VAT.
Yes.
No, not a shame about the VAT. We work for the club. Who are we playing? Well, I know, before we start. No, I'm going to let you start. You always start with I said last week. So here we go. Go on.
You say. I've been called out, apparently.
Yes, Terence from Red and Blue Army has written in his match report after the Bournemouth game. It opens Statman on the official Crystal Palace pod. Bournemouth, they hate Mondays. They never won a Premier League game on a Monday. In fact, they've only scored once on a Monday. All Palace fans. What's that, Bournemouth? You've never won on a Monday. You've only ever scored once in the Prem on a Monday. Don't worry. We've got you. Well done, Statman.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? I mean, what I will say, my prediction was 1-1, wasn't it? 1-1, and it's a big if, who would have known you're not allowed to punch someone in the face in the penalty area? Who would have known that? And that was 3 minutes from time. If that doesn't happen, that's a slight rule change, that, for me. You know, that was a little bit harsh, wasn't it?
I'm going to call it was a forearm. It wasn't a punch. That was harsh. It's not Boazzi Boxing Week on the podcast this week. Right, what have you got?
What have I got? I've got it all for you, Chris. I've got it all. Where do you want me to start?
Let's start at the very beginning. The words of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Okay, very nice. Nice quote there. Right, I'm going to give you an interesting fact about Wolves to start with. Just about the club, okay? Why are they playing gold and black? You take a huge sigh here.
I don't really care. Gold and black. What's in the Midlands? Something to do with what's in the Midlands? It's the Black Country, but...
Yeah.
Is that what the black is?
To do with it? No.
There's no gold in that.
Just like seeing you squirm and struggle, that's all.
Give me a clue.
Religion. That's the clue. He's looking at my notes and trying to read it now.
You can't have that. No, I don't know much about religion.
Okay. So it was founded...
Other than football.
Nice.
Oh, I feel sick for saying that. Carry on.
Bit cheesy. Right. Basically, Wolves were founded by two pupils that were taught at a church. So they're heavily religious. And the slogan and the saying that they adopted, out of the darkness cometh the light. So the gold and the black is the darkness and the light. You like that one, don't you?
Yeah.
I found that interesting.
That's all right. Well done. Good research.
Thank you very much. One other one. And all these stats, by the way, in terms of the team, you can always read them in the programme. Very well written. Johnny Rogers and Billy Cook, designer.
You didn't write it?
I did not write the programme. No, I didn't write the programme. But you can read all these stats in the programme. Bit of a plug for the programme.
You've gone so corporate. This is disgusting. Carry on.
And here's the one to impress the friends. First ever side to be awarded a penalty was Wolverhampton Wanderers in 1891 against Accrington Stanley.
Who are they?
Well, they conceded the first penalty to Wolves. That's who they are, and went on to lose 5-0.
You didn't get that, did you?
No.
Advert reference.
It was their saying, wasn't it?
Accrington Stanley, who are they?
Was what, where it's from, isn't it?
I thought it was Caramac, no?
Let's give a soccer AM.
That's a Caramac advert.
Okay, you seem more confident than me, so...
I'm older than you.
We'll go with that.
Right.
Right, then. Yeah. You don't want useless ones, do you? You want it about Palace and Wolves, don't you?
No, give me more useless ones. I like it. This is good. This is great content.
Yeah, we're just beefing out the pod here, aren't we, with useless stats. But no, I'm going to go specific to Palace and Wolves. And right now, you want to know, what are Palace and Wolves Premier League statistics? And I'll hold my hands up. You know, when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And when I don't have anything, I don't have anything. And I don't have anything because they've never met in the Premier League.
Ooh, that's a good stat.
There's a stat in itself. I've made a stat out of nothing there. So there's your first stat. Struggling for statistics this week, as you can tell. But let's go with the next one then. So we'll start with some positives, though. When they have met in all competitions, Palace have won the last three.
Good news.
There's a positive one. And Zaha, again, do I have to mention him? But I will. Again, he does like playing against them. He scored twice and got an assist in his last two games against Wolves. That was in the Championship in 2012-13.
I like that one. That stat is very nice tasting.
But as Terence called me out, I did get a little bit carried away, didn't I? I get positive. Everyone thinks we're going to win. We lose. So let me give you some negative ones, shall I? Wolves' form is fantastic. They've won three out of their last four and drawn that one. And Palace, this isn't so great. We've had 44 shots so far at home, which is as many as Arsenal. Yet to score, obviously. And if we fail to score at home, we'll be the second team this season alone to fail to score in our opening four home Premier League games. Let's hope that doesn't happen. You know, I'm missing you mentioning the goal scorer. Is it you?
No, it's not me. It is. Yes, I remember that. I better look after my voice.
Yeah.
No, it is me tomorrow. Mike's on holiday.
You don't know because... oh, right. So Mike's been doing it beforehand. Okay. Yeah, I was going to say you don't know because you've not had to do it yet, have you?
Done it before, yeah.
No, but I mean, we haven't had a goal scorer this season.
No, Mike hasn't done it. No, so I'll be doing it before Mike. Sorry, Mike.
You get that. Could it be the curse of Mike? There we go. Is it Mike's curse? We'll find out.
I hope not, because then... No, let's have a nil-nil. I don't want to have to do it all season. Okay. I'm busy taking my notes for the halftime challenge. Okay. Writing down kids' ages.
Very true. And you post-match interviews, to be fair.
Yes, of course, yeah.
You're very busy, man. So let me give you some more negatives, because we're loving these. No, I'll tell you what do we have to watch out for? This is the big one. Do you remember Newcastle? I said, watch out for those subs. Whatever you do, watch out for those subs.
Yeah, what happened? Were you right? No.
Absolutely not.
Were we watching out for subs?
No, but we're watching out for the second half, Chris. We've got to watch out for the second half. What percentage of goals have Wolves scored in the second half, I hear you say?
Probably quite high, I would guess.
Yeah, or else it wouldn't be a very interesting stat.
Is that because they pass a lot, so they pass it around, get teams tired, and then they in the second half, the other team's so tired that that's when Wolves can score?
Maybe. It could be that they've got the greatest cohesion. They haven't changed their team once, their starting lineup. They're the only team in the Prem. I've made that stat up, actually. I'm going to call myself out on that before someone calls myself out. It just sounded a great stat. But what they have done, they haven't changed their team once in all seven games so far. So they like playing together. They clearly play well. Maybe the other subs, they throw the other teams. I don't know. We're not football men, are we? That's why we do what we do and Roy does what he does.
Yeah, I just ask questions about it because I don't know the answers. Is there some... Did we have some record in the first half? Did that? I'm sure I saw that pop up on Sky somewhere. No, I don't know it. It was like we hadn't conceded many goals in the first half. Am I right about that from this season? Have I made that up?
I think you've made that up.
We'll cut this out.
Yeah.
Or not, no, we've got a busy day today, we haven't got time to edit, so...
Okay. That was fantastic.
Oh, I've bored you.
All this waffle.
Oh, God, I'll cut this out.
Right, I haven't even given you the percentage. 88% of their Premier League goals come in the second half. 88%.
Wow.
That's massive. So watch out for the second half. And who do we need to watch out for? Raul Jimenez. Have I pronounced that right?
Yeah,
I think. Well, where is he from?
Raul Jimenez. I don't know. Ken, you call me up on that one.
Raul
Jimenez hath been directly involved in 50% of Wolves' 8 Premier League goals. 50%. 2 goals, 2 assists.
It's impressive stuff.
It is impressive stuff. And let me lead on to one more from a Palace point of view. Premier League in 2018. Who do you think's been involved in most goals for Palace? Bit of an easy one to start us off with.
Does it, Wilfred Armel Zaha?
Yes, it does. So 11 goals he's been involved with, either scored or assisted, in 2018 in the Premier League. Who's number two, I hear you say?
I think I can guess this, and I haven't looked. Is it Patrick Van Aanholt?
Yeah, I'm going to have to call you up. Have you been looking, haven't you?
No, Sky highlighted that in his past however many games he's got. Is it past 6 goals and so many assists in 11 games, something like that?
To be fair, well done. 6 goals, 2 assists. Yeah, so number 2. So what a man in form, to be fair. And what a hit it was Monday night. You enjoyed that? You weren't there, but you enjoyed it, didn't you?
Yeah, I watched it at home, actually. I went up to Milton Keynes to interview Danny Butterfield, who was on the pod earlier. Brilliant. And then got back just in time for Bournemouth's goal.
Ah, yeah, not a great start there.
But what a hit from Patrick. And he always seems to get it at the near post. He's beaten keeper. He did it against De Gea, and then he did it against West Brom, I think.
Yeah.
With his right foot as well.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope the keepers aren't listening to this one. Because, yeah, he's absolutely does, doesn't he? Near post, and he's got a big old hit on him. So, more of the same. Let's get that first home goal of the season, hey?
You looking forward to match day?
I am. I am looking forward to match day. Yeah. I'm in the premium lounges again. So, yeah, interviewing. We've got a very special guest coming into Speroni's. Very special guest coming in before the game.
Who's that?
I don't know if I can give it away, really.
Oh, secret guest.
A secret guest. Is it a secret guest? Yeah. No, it is a secret guest. I'm not going to reveal it, but we have a secret guest coming in. And then we've got all the usuals. Your Clinton Morrisons, your Darren Ambroses, your Jim Cannons, your Neil Shipperleys. I'm plugging too much.
You're plugging it, but can people still buy tickets?
They can. Speak to our head of premium, Chris Woods. That's chris.woods@cpfc.co.uk. You can still get your tickets now.
You are horrific. Right, I'm going to leave you to bathe in pound notes. They don't exist. Right, back to me in the studio. And that section was sponsored by Statman's Christmas Bonus. Here's a man who charges no VAT for his press conferences, Roy Hodgson.
Good afternoon, Roy.
Afternoon.
Could you update us on any injuries ahead of tomorrow, please?
Well, it's still Christian Benteke is the one. You know, we've been expecting that. He needs a bit more time, so we know that, but he's making good progress. But he's really the one, apart from the other two long-term injuries of Scott Dann and Connor Wickham, but both are back in training. So we've got a good squad of players at the moment.
It's been a few days since the match at Bournemouth. Do you feel there's been any lessons learned from that experience?
Well, not really. I mean, obviously we made a mistake to lose the game, and there's no one trying to deny that. And certainly Mamadou, who was the most important person concerned, is not trying to deny the responsibility, but mistakes happen in football matches. I tend to look at matches over the whole, really. I thought that over the 95 minutes we actually played very, very well, and obviously bitterly disappointed that we made that mistake and it cost us the game. But the fact is, in every game that's won, the manager of the losing team could point to a mistake that his team has made, which has cost a goal, perhaps, which has cost them the game. So in Mamadou's case, it was doubly unfortunate because he's been so good. He's been arguably, playing the best football of his time, certainly at Crystal Palace. We've been really delighted with everything that he's been doing. And it's tough for him, of course, to have to accept that, OK, on this occasion I was punished for a mistake I shouldn't have made.
How has it affected him and the other players, losing him in that way, in that late dramatic finish?
No, it happens in football. We have to come to terms with that. You've got to be mentally strong in football. You know, it's not a question of what you deserve and it's what you get. But you must continue to believe that the better you play and the better your performance is and the more you're able to have control during the game and to create chances, you're going to win more games than you lose. But there's always going to be games like this one, which is a bitter pill to swallow, because with 5 minutes to go, I thought we'd done more than enough to get our result. I think that was the general opinion too.
At this stage in the season, how important is it now to try and get this first home win? Is that something that's on your mind and the players' minds, or is it something that we're just thinking about?
Well, I mean, everyone thinks about it, I can't deny that, but it's not something which occupies our every waking minute, because we know that wanting something isn't the same as getting something. All we can do is prepare as best we can and put what we think is our best team out on the field with the best possible preparation to win the game. And then the game will be what the game is. And you hope it's going to go your way. You hope that the chances you create are going to be taken. You hope that any mistakes you make are not going to be punished. And that's going to be the case going right the way through the season. Of course, the longer you don't win at home, the more the pressure will build up. We're aware of that. But we can do nothing more than we do to relieve that pressure, and we just need to make certain now tomorrow that we go out and give that performance that we are determined to give.
Do you feel there's a reason behind why you haven't won at home and why you haven't scored?
Not really. I mean, the programme has been measured, I suppose. Liverpool was a tough first one to play at home, but against Southampton and against Newcastle, I thought we had our chances. I thought that, you know, on both occasions it wouldn't have been totally wrong. Certainly in the Newcastle game it wouldn't have been wrong had we won it, but we didn't. The chances didn't go in, and that's also a fact of life, a fact of football life, and the important thing is to make certain that you don't allow it to weigh upon your mind, and even more importantly perhaps, you don't stop going into the areas and doing the things that have been quite good in your general play, which have created the opportunities in the first place.
You've mentioned how strong you have to be as a footballer, mentally strong. Have you had to advise the players or give them any kind of support in terms of their mental strength in when thinking about that stat, the fact that they haven't played at home? Do you have to talk them out of it and the fact that they shouldn't be dwelling on it?
There won't be too many stats that will really bother us to that extent after last season. I spent the first, you know, three games of my time at the club discussing every week how we were going to get away from the statistic of first four games, no goals, no points, no draws. Then it came to five, then it came to six, then it came to seven. And then I was being told this is the worst start that a Premiership team's ever made, and that no team has ever survived after getting no points after seven games, and the minus 18 goal difference basically means you're minus one, let alone 0 points. So I spent weeks doing that, as did the players, because I think we got a nice little international break in between times, which added another couple of weeks to the time we had to reflect upon it. And we were strong enough to get over that, so I don't have any real doubts about the players' mental strength. And I certainly haven't felt during the training sessions we've had this week that anyone's needed any extra counselling. They know what happened. They know what was good about Monday night's performance. They know, of course, what could have been avoided. And they'll be taking all that into the game tomorrow, because every experience strengthens you.
That was a first start for Max Meyer in the game against Bournemouth. How pleased were you with his performance, and do you feel like he could be a player that you use more in the future?
Well, he was bought for us to use, and that he didn't get a start straight away, but I was pleased with his performance. I thought he did well, he worked hard, he had a lot of the ball, so we can't criticise his performance anyway. The thing is, at the moment, we have a very strong squad to choose from, and, you know, we bought Max and Cech Kouyaté and Jordan Ayew into our squad to make us stronger as a squad of players, not because we thought that the 11 guys who were playing last year were particularly bad or had to be replaced. We brought them in to compete for places and make those that actually had the shirt play even better, because they knew these guys are right behind them. And up to now, that's exactly what's happened. Every time Cech has come onto the field, every time Max has come onto the field in Jordan, they've proved to me that these three are going to make us a stronger group of players going forward. And you don't play with 11 these days, you play with 18 at least.
Just a question on Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who's been left out of the England squad this time around. He came here last season and really enjoyed himself, and really made a name for himself. It's often been hard for young players to try and get first team minutes. Would he be someone you'd consider bringing back to the club as someone who's obviously desperate to get some game time?
Well, I think it's not really right to discuss those things, because, you know, it's a hypothesis that Chelsea are not happy with him, a hypothesis that Chelsea are not considering to be a very important member of their first team squad, and I don't like to discuss players in that respect. Well, I am prepared to say, of course, and I've said it on many occasions, Ruben Loftus-Cheek did an outstanding job for us when he came here. He really, for us, answered all the questions that we hoped he would answer. And luckily for us, and even more so him, it got him recognised by the national team, and he found himself in Russia representing England, which was a perfect end, if you like, to the season that he'd had with us. So we admire him, we like him very much, and we wish him well. And of course, like a lot of other clubs, I'm sure, when the day comes, when he becomes available for transfer, we'll be sticking our nose into that. But whether we'll get him again, that's another matter. Who knows? We'll see.
And finally, on Wolves tomorrow, a promoted team bucking the trend, very much in form. What kind of threat will they pose tomorrow?
Well, they pose a threat. Their start has been excellent. Obviously, they're a good team. We've watched them as much as we can. We've done our video analysis of them. We've had our reports, of course, our scouting reports. And everything that comes back is very positive with regard to how well they're playing and what good players they have. So it's going to be a big test. They're way up there in the table, which, as you rightly say, for newcomers isn't always the case. So we are preparing for a very, very difficult game. But once again, at the risk of being very boring, it would have been the case had they been bottom of the table too with no points. It wouldn't really have changed our thinking anyway. We'd have still been thinking this is a good team, this is a bona fide a Premier League team with some very good players who are capable of causing you some damage. And so we'd have been preparing exactly the same way. But I'm sure their mood is very good, their confidence must be very high. And that's a nice thing to know when you're the coach of a team or the manager of a team, that you have that going for you.
Thank you, Roy.
My pleasure.
Okay, great.
Right. Yeah. Some people are saying that they're actually the best team to have been promoted into the Premier League, if not in the history of the Premier League, for a long, long time, because of the players they have and because of the project, and the likes of Ruben Neves, who last year was in the Championship and now is clearly a Premier League player. Would you agree with that?
Well, I don't agree or disagree. I mean, I think that it's dangerous. I certainly wouldn't want that being said if I was the manager of Wolves. I wouldn't want people saying that, you know, you're the best and you're the best team that's ever been promoted. I think it probably depends how far you go back in time, one. I will remind you, of course, that Hull City were top of the Premiership in September not so long ago, when I was at Fulham, I think it was. So I'm sure that the manager, Nuno, won't be thinking along those terms. I can only say that when you're in charge of a team like that and you're getting all those nice things said about you and all that praise coming your way, you should lap it up, you should enjoy it. But I'm pretty sure it's not going to his or the players' heads. And I'm sure that, like ourselves and most other teams in the Premier League, they take each game as it comes and they prepare for a difficult task every time they step out onto the field. But I'm impressed by them, like everybody else, and I congratulate them on such a good start.
What do you make of the whole project there? Because last season there were some people in the Championship that weren't overly enamoured by how it was all set up, the Portuguese players coming in under one agent.
No, I don't have any comments about that. I mean, the fact is each club must decide its own strategy when it comes to the manager they want to appoint, the players they want to bring in, which agents they do or do not want to work with. That's entirely up to each and every club, and I don't have any opinion on the subject at all.
The England squad was announced yesterday, and Gareth Southgate gave him lots of plaudits for bringing in young players. Of course, it's nothing new. You gave Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Eric Dier, when they were very young men, their England debuts. How far
That's just three of the 15, but yeah. That's okay.
I wasn't going to name them all. How far away this season do you think Aaron Wan-Bissaka is from maybe he was making that? Because he's getting more minutes, and you're trusting a young player here at Palace.
Well, I would think the first thing to say, if I was in Gareth's position, that he faces very stiff competition, because in Walker and Kieran Trippier, they've had great success down that right-hand side, and now there's Trent Arnold as well, who's also done a fantastic job at Liverpool. So for him to break in, he's got to knock a few people over along the way before he's maybe considered. But we believe in him. We think he's very good. England obviously do too, because they're choosing him to be in their under-21 team. And I think that it's been proven over the last 5 or 6 years really in England that if you are young, if you are in an under-21 team and you've committed your future to England, if you are playing on a fairly regular basis for your team in the league, either Premier League or Championship, you have a chance of being selected. So I think that seeing people like Mount selected on this occasion, Maddison selected on this occasion, the lad from Borussia Dortmund being selected on this occasion. That should really be a fillip for players like Aaron Bissaka, because he should be thinking, well, if those guys can play well enough and attract the attention of the national team manager, so can I.
Last one from me. I mean, if I include Wayne Hennessy and James McArthur, and I'll include Will because he was born in England. A high proportion of your team are British, which is very, very unusual in the Premier League. I mean, you obviously trust players from the Isles to do what most other managers don't.
Well, you've got to be careful there, because I've only signed four players and they're all foreign. So I think I've got to be a bit careful.
Fair enough.
But that doesn't mean to say that I signed them because they were foreign as opposed to English. I'd have been perfectly happy had they been English too, with the qualities that they possess and what they brought to the team. But I should be the last person in the world to start trying to bang the drum that teams should be English, not least of all because I've coached four national teams other than the English one, or three other than the English one as a foreigner. So I have to be very careful what I say.
Afternoon, Roy.
Afternoon.
How important is it for Wolves to succeed, particularly in that area of the West Midlands, where they've lost so many top-flight clubs to the Championship in recent years, Aston Villa, West Brom, Birmingham? They're rather shining a light now, aren't they, for that part of England?
Yes, they are. I mean, obviously, there was an enormous rivalry between West Bromwich Albion and Wolverhampton when I was there, so I was on the wrong side of that rivalry, if you like, as a West Brom manager. But it's a very, very important area of football, the Midlands, you know, Birmingham and the area. The teams you mentioned are top clubs with a fantastic tradition and history, all of them. And, you know, it wouldn't be amiss if all four were in the Premiership, you know, with their pedigree and with their traditions. But the fact is, there is no God-given right to that, and traditions and pedigrees don't give you, if you like, a passage into the Premier League. You have to earn it, you have to win it, and then when you're there, you've got to stay there. And Wolves, they actually lost their Premier League status while I was at West Bromwich Albion, and now it's vice versa. Wolves have catapulted back and West Brom down. But I'm sure that for Midlands football, and Birmingham football in particular, the people in that area will be looking forward to the day when all four are back in there, and the rivalry at top level is once again. When I went to West Brom, Aston Villa and Birmingham and Wolves, I think, were all in the league, if I remember correctly. And that's not so long ago.
This is a bit left field. Muno, the manager at Wolves, used to be a goalkeeper in his playing days. Goalkeepers don't really make successful managers at the top flight, do they? And why not?
He has.
Yeah. Well, he's unusual. He's a one-off.
Well, the fact is, you should know by now that of all the statisticians that pride themselves on knowing a lot about the footballing statistics, I'd be very near the bottom of the list. You'd have to go searching to see, you know, who would have filled that role. But I'd be very surprised if someone who really prides himself on knowing all there is to know about English football and managers and where they played, I'd be very surprised if that person couldn't come up with a few names. I can only give you one. That was Dino Zoff.
Yeah. Totally.
And he wasn't bad, actually. He wasn't a bad goalkeeper.
Okay.
Okay. That concludes the broadcast.
Just one.
Broadcast.
Yeah, just a quick one, yeah, sure. Roy, there are quite a number of young players who are turning out for England. Most of them have a possibility of playing for other countries. Like, for example, here you have Wan-Bissaka. What would be your advice to both the young players and also the England setup on how to manage that transition? We've seen quite a number of them playing for the under-21s, but then going on to play.
Worse than that, we've seen people like Wilf Sahar playing for the first national team during my time and going on to play for somebody else. So it doesn't have to just be under-21s. It can be playing for the senior national team, and as long as it's not a qualifier, which is or a match in a final tournament, you can change your mind. If you ask me, do I think that's right? The answer is no, I don't. I think people, once they've committed themselves, certainly to play for a country at under 21, and even more importantly at senior level, they should stick with it. But as far as England's concerned, they will have to live with that, and they will. You'll find that a lot of players will be tempted by their native land into signing and playing for them instead, on the basis that the coaches and the managers of those teams will be saying, look, you face very stiff competition here in England, whereas if you come to us, there's a much bigger chance that you'll play. But I'm sorry to say that in my experience, the players that I've worked with, and I can probably think of three or four, who have actually committed themselves to a team of maybe their parents or their grandparents, and not committed themselves, say, to England, you know, the country they've been brought up in and educated in. All the ones I know have regretted it, but who knows? I think it would depend very much on your ties to that country. You know, the influence your parents are making on you and your grandparents, of course, that has to be taken into account, but also your ties to the country. And don't forget, you know, we have a lot of players. You know, Bissaka's been with us since the age of about 7 or 8, I think, hasn't he? So, basically speaking, if suddenly he was now to dive off and play for his native land, and I don't even know what that is, I'm ashamed to say.
DR Congo.
Then, in some ways, that could be regarded as a bit of a disappointment for us here in England, because we believe it's us and not the DR Congo that have made him the football he is today.
And just last one, more and more top players are also opting to pace themselves to manage the number of games that they play at international level as a way of perhaps keeping fit because of the high number of games that they have to play for their club. Is this something that you might have perhaps had a discussion with Wilfred Zaha about?
Nope. Wilfred and I have not discussed his national team duty at all. I was very surprised last time to see that he wasn't included. I still don't know what the reason for that is. I presume it's a reason that is concerned something between him and his national team and has nothing to do with me whatsoever. And I certainly have never been guilty of encouraging or trying to persuade players not to play for their national team, because in my career I've had 4 years with England, I've had 4 years with Switzerland, I've had 2 years with the UAE, I've had 2 years with Finland. What's that, over 12 years is that? 12 years of a career of wanting players to leave their clubs and to play for me in the national team. So it would be unbelievably hypocritical of me to start trying to persuade players you shouldn't be playing for your national team. I believe, maybe even somewhat naively, that being selected for your national team is an honour. It's something you should be proud of, and that basically speaking, when you're given the opportunity, and it's not an opportunity that comes everybody's way, you should be proud and grateful, and you should be keen to go. And I know, for example, here now, Mamadou Sakho, who's not African, or he's African origin, but he plays in France, he's absolutely delighted that he's been called up for the national team, and his good performances have been recognised. I know very well that Cheku Keate and Pap Soare are desperate to play for Senegal. They can't wait. And every time a squad is announced and Pap's name is not in it, he's absolutely devastated. So I think in that respect, the African countries aren't any worse off, if you like, than the European countries, where there's maybe just as big a risk that people will try to pull out of their respective national teams because they're worried about future Champions League fixtures or fixtures in the top leagues in Europe.
Thank you. Thanks very much.